on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Elise Glink, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. We often talk about the economy, of course, and real estate, too, with Elise. But today she's looking at some of the hacks in the healthcare industry. How did this pop up on? I know the story a little bit, but why is that something you were looking into, Elise?
Well, you know, there's just a lot of money at stake, John. You know, people don't even realize how many millions and millions of prescriptions, doctor visits, expenses, medical expenses go through the system each and every week. I mean, we're talking just almost unfathomable numbers. And when we had this cyber attack on United Healthcare, and we've seen some of the other healthcare organizations shut down with their systems as well, these companies have taken to processing these prescriptions, whether it's a pharmacy or it's an oncology service unit. They're working on these things by hand, John. And so people are, the billing just isn't going through. The cycle has been completely broken. And these health organizations are not getting repaid any of the money that they should be paid by, you know, health insurance companies or Medicare or people. So without being able to process these companies are now facing ruin, financial ruin. And I think it's something we have to be concerned about.
I presume they would get paid, but now they've got to float everybody, and that might not be possible, huh?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, how long can you keep people on? You know, just running a small business myself with employees and expenses and things like that. I mean, how long can you keep running a business when you have no revenue coming in, or if your revenue is half of what you've budgeted for? I mean, that's fine for maybe a payroll or two, but for most companies in this country, going without revenue or the expected revenue would basically cause them to have to lay off people or ask their people to work and that without getting paid. And of course, we know what kind of problems that causes. So there's a real waterfall effect that's at work here. And we're about 2-3 weeks past when this initially started to unfold. Now is crunch time for people because you've got another round of payroll coming up.
2 or 3 weeks in the case of United Healthcare, maybe, because Lurie Children's Hospital has been a couple of months.
Correct. And they finally started getting things back online. They were able to make it work. But some of these other smaller, and they're big, right? Lurie is huge. United Healthcare is huge. It's the care providers that we have in this country that are on their own that are not as able to make it work. So you might have a podiatrist's office that has 5 people on staff. They serve 300 people or 500 people, and suddenly they find themselves without any revenue.
It reminds me a little bit of what, and I don't know if Illinois still has this problem. Maybe all states have had this problem with all of their governors. But when Blagojevich, the way I remember it, was governor, if you won a contract from the state, and it could have been as an accountant or it could have been as a carpenter, and you do work for the state, you don't get paid for 9 months, maybe longer, because we didn't have the money or we were just slow to process it. Which, boy, talk about floating somebody. You're floating us. You've also noticed what's happened to gas prices, right?
Well, they've gone up just a bit. I was at Costco the other day and I thought, it wasn't this much last week, and sure enough, things have gone up. It's about $4, a little under $4 a gallon at Costco in Glenview. But mid-January, we were paying prices that were a lot lower than that. The national average this week, $3.40, according to AAA. Mid-January, it was $3.07. So we're seeing it rise all over the place, but experts say they're not so concerned just yet. They think it's going to level off, and this is where it's going to be for the. We always pay a little more in the summer, which in my mind is counterintuitive, right? Because even though you drive more in the summer, you spend a lot to heat your home in the winter. But of course, different types of gas all kinds of stuff.
Well, the level off, schmevel off, I'd like it to get back to $3 a gallon. I think I saw 470 something in the city this weekend.
Yeah, the when you start getting into certain neighborhoods and counties, the gas tax does hit pretty hard. But we'll have to see what ends up happening. We know that some of the Saudi Aramco announced they had a huge loss this year. Well, I shouldn't say loss. They made a lot less money than they did the year before. And part of that was because prices were a little bit lower. And part of it is because the United States is now doing a gangbuster business with production of oil and gas products. So It'd be interesting to see how this plays out as the year goes on, but overall, it's a lot lower than where it was, say, in the middle of the pandemic.
You just said our U.S. production, domestic production is up?
Domestic production seems to be up, yeah.
We have talked on this show and at other times when I'm on the air here about what percentage of baby boomers are supporting Gen Z or millennials. And I'm trying to remember some of the numbers here, but you're talking about that too. And you even have a monthly average that parents are shelling out for their kids.
Yeah, this is kind of crazy. So a new report from savings.com says that parents are now spending almost $1,400 a month on average to help their Gen Z and millennial adult children. So this is over the age of 18. They are just having trouble. They're trouble paying for groceries and food. In fact, 81% of parents who have Gen Z adult kids are helping them pay for groceries or food. 70% are paying for their cell phone bill, 60% rent and mortgage, 67% are still on their health care, and they're picking up that tab and other things as well. And this is really adding up. I mean, this was, I found that it was a little bit disturbing. And I'm, you know, as we continue to move forward from the pandemic, I get that during the pandemic, parents were doing this, but apparently, kids are really in, it's still struggling. Millennials are struggling to buy houses, and parents are coming to the rescue.
Yeah, I'll have to ask Terry Savage more about this, and I appreciate your opinion on this, too, because one wonders if it's, in fact, not best if those young people do struggle. You struggled, and your mom and dad struggled, and their mom and dad struggled, and maybe it's better if those young people learn to curb their spending, work harder, suffer more, and not be such gracious recipients of our largesse. Because remember, you're not doing your kids any favors if you outlive your money.
Yeah, it's a bigger problem for me that over half of the parents say they're sacrificing their own financial security for the sake of their adult children. And it's 58% are saying that this year, 37% said it a year ago. So that number is higher. Parents are struggling, a lot of them, with their own paycheck-to-paycheck situation, but they're still, you know, giving up things, including supporting their own retirement future, right, in order to be able to help their kids. And I get feeling that way about it, but at some point in time, you know, you have 35-year-old kids, you got to let them grow up and figure out how they're going to make this work. Or else on the flip side of it, you know, when you're in your 80s and you're looking to your kids for help, they may not be able to have the wherewithal to be able to help you if you need it. So truly, truly troubling.
Boy, we got a lot of texts when this came up a couple of weeks ago. And listen, if you can, I'm not telling you how to live your life or spend your money. And if you are going to be fine, and you want to share your good fortune with your kids, I think that's okay. I mean, Brenda and I have done versions of this over the course of our lives with our kids ourselves. So I'm not perfect on this. But I do think it's fair to ask yourself if this sort of thwarts their, as you said, resourcefulness. Maybe they won't be as independent as you had to be.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that, John. I do get that we've had extraordinary high inflation, highest in, you know, decades. And I do get that it's very expensive to make it work. But more kids than before have college degrees. They're earning more money. You know, at some point in time, your kids you have to say to your kids, look, there's this thing called a budget. And let me tell you a little bit about how that works. Because I think that, you know, some kids today, you know, feel like everything is within reach. They're seeing it modeled on Instagram,
yeah,
and on,
right,
Facebook and TikTok, right?
Right? I'm glad
it's all possible.
61% of adult children still living at home do not contribute to household expenses at all, according to that survey.
Yeah, that's also a little bit frightening. I think parents also should not be paying for leisure activities and vacations for their kids. Now, if you want to take your kids with you on vacation and you can afford to do that, awesome. I think that's great. But sending your kids out, you know, for a vacation in Cabo while you're not able to, you know, contribute to your retirement account, I'm not so cool with that. And I think you have to take a little bit of a longer view here.
Yeah.
Now, full disclosure, John, we still pay for our kids' cell phone bills. Why? Not because they need it. I just want to be really clear about it. It's just that we have such a good deal that I know they can't get that deal themselves. And so we pick up the bill for that. I think we pay an extra. Actually, we don't pay anything extra. We just get to include them for free.
Well, that's it. In an era of bundling, I will give anybody a get-out-of-jail card on that. 847 said, with housing costs and low wages, why would anyone be surprised young people are struggling? Also, how many of those parents are helping adult children with rent because parents don't want them to move back in?
Good point.
we're out of time, but Elise is not. She can visit with you on her own website, and she'll join us again next Monday. You can always click on thinklink.com. Thank you, Elise. Jim Dahlke is here, the national editor at American Inno. Jim, welcome back. How are you today?
Hey, John, doing great. Thanks for having me.
Super duper. You know, I heard a little bit about this Shark Tank episode where a Chicago entrepreneur got Mark Cuban to buy in. There was a bit of a bidding war going on there, right?
Yeah, this is a company called Mella Pet Care. This is a pet startup here in Chicago. They create a thermometer for pets. Interesting little business, a non-invasive thermometer here. It allows you to take their temperature under the hind leg of your cat or your dog. They went into the tank asking for $250,000. They scored a deal with Mark Cuban, only giving up 2.5% equity stake in the company. In terms of a Shark Tank deal, that's pretty good. You see companies head into the tank and have to give up pretty good sizable chunks of their businesses in many instances. So that's a pretty reasonable deal for these guys. And yeah, you know, we've kept our eye on Chicago startups that have gone to the tank for years and years and years. I mean, companies like Spikeball way back when, before it became, you know, everybody's favorite beach and lake toy, was on Shark Tank.
I didn't know even, that. Wow.
Yeah. So they were, I think about 2015, was one of those companies there. And, Plui, the sort of UV light, baby changing table that disinfects itself. It was recently there as well. So it's definitely something we keep an eye on. For startups, the Shark Tank is basically a free 15-minute national commercial. It's almost more, the marketing aspect of it is almost more valuable than the investment from the sharks themselves. Companies see huge boosts in sales typically when they go on the tank episodes, whether they get an investment or not. And certainly this company, Mella Pet Care, happy to get an investment from Mark Cuban, probably one of the last, actually.
I was going to say.
He's going to not participate in the show anymore.
Yeah. I wonder what the portfolio is of the sharks over the years. Like, if they have stakes in all of these companies, do they retain those? Do they generate revenue for these experts over the years? Or is it all just nonsense where they spin it off? I don't know.
I think Mark Cuban has said he has on the aggregate lost money overall. Now, that doesn't mean all his investments haven't all, you know, potentially got acquired, right? So it's like maybe some unrealized gains for some of those businesses. But, you know, of course, you know, Shark Tank missed out on probably the biggest company to ever go through it, which was the Ring doorbell, and the investors all declined to invest. And of course, we all know what happened to Ring since. And so, you know, lots of companies come and go from that show itself, but it's not always a guaranteed success that they're going to continue to grow after their appearance.
Boy, I'm going to go back and look for that episode. I wonder what happened with the pitch. That's crazy.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, not just Spikeball, but lots of, and we've seen software companies that have gone on to Shark Tank as well. Packback was a startup that's done well since the Shark Tank episodes. And it's definitely, like I said, a huge marketing opportunity for startups when they get a chance to get on that show.
I'm surprised there's such an audience, though, or maybe potential for a thermometer for pets, because we've had pets for years and years and years, and we never took their temperature. I don't even know what it's supposed to be. I don't know what I would do if they were running a slight fever. Like if it's my kid, 100%. But if it's my cat or dog, I don't know. We're fine.
Yeah. That's a great point. And I think that part of it is the education aspect of it, too. It's like helping pet owners have a little bit more information. What Mella Pet Care's device also does is sends that information, that data, to your vet's office. So you can send that that temperature reading wirelessly to your vet. And so then they could give you a call, be like, hey, well, this is hit a threshold where we need to get you guys in the office here. And so I think that's part of it too, right? So getting a little bit more you know, information for the pet owner rather than just like, hey, I'm not sure exactly what to do with this.
DePaul University Startup Fund makes two new investments. I didn't know they had a university startup fund.
Yeah, this is a relatively new endeavor for DePaul. So yeah, not just, you know, teaching entrepreneurship. They're also investing in entrepreneurs directly through this new fund. It launched just a couple of years ago, and they make investments, you know, up to $150,000 per company. So, you know, not a bad chunk of change here for startups. You know, they try to invest in companies that are affiliated with DePaul or have, you know, DePaul alumni. But, you know, they've made four investments so far. And a couple of them, you know, one of them most recently called Mooski Snacks. Really interesting snack startup. They're a maker of fresh granola bars. Kind of interesting approach here for these guys. They say that they belong in the fridge, not in your pantry. So they're able to kind of take out preservatives and all the other things that are in kind of your granola bars that's in your pantry. And instead, you put these in your refrigerator, stay a little fresher. And they're kind of taking, a cool approach to the granola bar space. But yeah, those are the kind of businesses that DePaul is investing in. Definitely an interesting fund in town. I wasn't familiar with these guys until recently either. But yeah, definitely interesting to see DePaul kind of making these funds, making these investments into local startups.
Meanwhile, Northwestern University has a spin out too. Can you talk about that real quick?
Yeah, this is a company called NanoGraph. They are making kind of next generation batteries for electric vehicles and other devices. They've opened up a new facility in the West Loop. So they signed a lease on a property for about 68,000 square feet that's going to have some manufacturing space for them, as well as laboratory and some inventory space and office space as well. So they think they're going to really be able to continue to grow their business. This is a startup that's raised millions, actually about $45 million from the Department of Defense alone. They're powering some communication equipment with their batteries for soldiers on the ground. So this is really one of Chicago's kind of fast-growing startups, definitely one to keep an eye on, and they're continuing to expand in the West Loop.
Good to hear. Jim Dahlke, national editor at American Inno and ChicagoInno.com. Okay, Jim, let's do it again next week. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Justice Department has launched a criminal investigation into the Boeing jetliner blowout on an Alaska Airlines flight back in January. A published report says investigators have already contacted some people who were on the flight. The investigation will reportedly supplement a separate DOJ review of whether Boeing complied with a previous settlement. Boeing has acknowledged in a letter to Congress that it cannot find records for work done on a door panel that blew out on the Alaska Airlines flight. Electric vehicle maker Rivian will get an incentive package from the state of Illinois after it announced plans to make a new model in downstate Normal. Rivian says it'll make its new R2 SUV there after pausing plans to build a new factory in Georgia. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity says the elements of the package are still being finalized and will be made public after the package takes shape. Rivian employs about 8,000 people at the downstate plant. It's possible the company will expand the plant to produce even more vehicles. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, here's the business of food now with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. Let's talk about cereal again today. I've got an update on that Caitlin Clark Crunch Time cereal. But first,
the snack companies think you won't notice if they change the size of the bag and put a hell of a lot fewer, same size bag. Put fewer chips in it.
More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, President Biden.
Too many corporations raise prices to pad their profits, charging more and more for less and less. It's called shrinkflation.
Shrinkflation is a real thing.
That is Tom Welge. He is president of Gilster Mary Lee, one of the biggest manufacturers of private label foods in North America. It has factories in Illinois and Missouri and is based in Chester, Illinois. Cereal is one of the products where you're getting less.
If you trace the net weight size of cereal boxes over the past few years, you'll definitely see downsizing occurring.
And what's driving that?
That would be the national brands. They make the decisions to establish what price points and what sizes they want to market. we do follow in private label because we want the consumer to see a like comparison, and we think we can show a good value versus the national brand, no matter what size they might pursue.
By the way, Tom, did you catch one of the execs at Kellogg's saying we should have more cereal for dinner?
That's a great idea. I think cereal is something that can bring us back to our childhood, to some great memories, but it's also a really economical way for us to make our food dollars go further and further, which is important to a lot of folks these days.
I thought cereal at dinner was a treat. Maybe mom was just trying to save money. Okay, the update on the Caitlin Clark cereal that you make at your company, Tom?
Caitlin Clark's Crunch Time breakfast cereal.
Want to buy some? Sorry, it's sold out at Hy-Vee stores across the Midwest, and Tom says, as of now, there is not an order for more. On the food calendar, it's Johnny Appleseed Day, honoring the legendary planter of appleseeds. Did you know that he is planted in Fort Wayne, Indiana? Yeah, there's a grave marker from 1845 in Johnny Appleseed Park. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Here's Nicole Flaveris, who is the owner of the Kinsey Chop House, and they've got a special event coming up on this a special month. It's Women's History Month, and there's Nicole, herself a female owner of the kind of restaurant that, Nicole, I would imagine is very male-centric. Is that true?
It is. It is. Thanks for having me, by the way. You know, we have updated the menu, though, to have a lot more seafood, and we are a steakhouse, but being that I'm of Greek descent, we've put some twists on a few salads and sides. So it really, we even can appeal to a vegan. We have quite a diverse group of guests coming in now.
That's interesting. I wonder if that's the woman's touch too. I mean, it's shame on me for speaking of these kind of generalities, but you brought
it
up.
True, though, and we are in the Midwest, and we are steak and potato, and yeah. You know, most business lunches, business meetings previously were very, very male dominated as far as the guest list goes.
Yeah.
But now, as you see more women being elevated, and quite frankly, it's taken too long for that, but we've got a healthy mix of both female and male guests.
I'm glad.
So you got to appeal to everybody.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, how many women order the salmon or they get the fish? And it's a compromise if there's only one item on the menu.
Right. Well, so before we only had salmon on the menu, and it's funny you mention it, but now we, you know, have whole Mediterranean sea bass from, you know, the Adriatic waters off of Greece and the Ionian. So it's not just one thing. And, you know, in this day and age when you have to do a lot of menu engineering and food costs going crazy, it's difficult, but it can be done.
Talk to me about this food pairing, this dinner experience you're having on Thursday.
So it's another way we try to reintroduce ourselves as Kinsey, you know, post-pandemic and people coming out and dining more. So we invite a guest chef in once a month. Our first one was a female. Our second one is Chef Taylor, who's coming in. And we ask them to look at Kinsey, its history, our roots, and what we're doing now with it, and reimagine it for one night only as a 7 or 8 course tasting menu. And I'm really proud because there's a lot of talented female chefs out there. And I'm really happy that I can showcase them because, you know, people only hear, you know, the kitchen is very male oriented. So I'm very happy that I can introduce Chicago to some really talented ladies.
That's Taylor Lucan you're talking about, the Michelin-starred Taylor Lucan. Okay, so this is Thursday, and it's a prefix with two seatings for $200. If you want the beverage pairing, it's $60 more. And the first course, I just want to run through this real quick. The first course is house pita. Second course, blue crystal prawn crudo. Then the third course, grilled eggplant. Then the fourth course, lamb Wellington. Then Maine lobster tail foie gras. And then Wagyu New York surf and turf. And then a Mediterranean flambé. Who's going to eat all of this stuff?
Believe it or not, it's so delicious. I'm not someone who can sit and have a whole, let's say, you know, cowboy steak. I sat through the, you know, dry run of it, and everything is so delicious. I couldn't stop eating. And, you know, it's also the way that it's done. It's not like it's French style where there's two bites on the plate. They're healthy sizes, but she knocked it out of the park. It's a delicious menu.
And it's called Liquid Gold because one of her signature items is honey, so it's woven into some of these recipes.
Yeah.
Is it still too late? Can I still get a seat
so
at the table?
I think the 7:30 seating, I think, has one seat left, and then there's availability at the 5:30 seating.
I'm glad to hear that. So, I think people are going out earlier these days. Have you noticed that?
I agree. And, you know, I myself am also, because I want to be in bed at a certain time and up. And it is, but, you know, it's rough running a restaurant.
Yeah, how are you going to get to bed early? That's not a luxury that restaurateurs normally have, is it?
Right? Yeah. No, but I try to, you know, at least eat my meal early so when I do get out of there.
Ah, yeah, that's smart. Nicole Flaveris is the owner of Kinsey Chop House. Okay, check it out. It's Thursday. You can still eat with these nice folks, and boy, doesn't that sound like a great menu. You'll see it all at KinseyChopHouse.com.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Nicole. Stay well, and good luck on that.